Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, I'm Jeff Anderson. I am one of the attorneys standing with us today that has the privilege to stand with and work with not just one courageous survivor that has filed this suit here that we're prepared to talk about, but with many survivors, some of whom stand with us today and stand with us here in this community for truth and child protection. We're here today because a courageous survivor identified in papers as AB 393 Doe had the courage to come forward with his truth. And his truth is that he was repeatedly sexually violated by a known offender by the name of Kepler. And then, at the age of 15, and in a ceremony, and after that, violated, assaulted by a prominent pastoral figure, then auxiliary bishop Groves. This courageous survivor shared this secret and suffered in shame months ago and years ago with his mother, but couldn't do more, but has now found a way with support to have come forward and identify Bishop Groves, not just for the priest and bishop so known in this community and beloved by so many, but as an offender. It takes courage and it takes help and it takes support. And this survivor has made a choice. And so we stand with him and for him today to reveal not just that name, but the practices that were employed by him and in this diocese in protecting so many for so long, so that kids can be safer in the future and survivors of those by Groves or by Kepler or by so many other offenders already named can continue to be identified and named under the law before August 13th, because there's a deadline. So we really express a debt of gratitude to this survivor for naming Groves and having the courage to do that. It's also significant to give context to that name and this bishop, because he is the bishop in this diocese as auxiliary for years that was tasked with responding to sexual abuse. He is the bishop that would contact the survivors after reports that were made. He was the bishop that was supposed to be handling this issue. And he is the bishop thus that is not only betrayed this survivor by exploiting and assaulting him, but by betraying so many survivors for so long by being a part of the concealment and the practice of not revealing what is known. We stand here today with a courageous survivor among others, who stood at this very place in 2018. His name is Mike Whalen. Mike, step up here. And in 2018, in the middle of winter, he made the courageous choice to stand up and identify his offender, Orsalas, and stand right here because the name had never been exposed or known to the community as an offender. And I'm going to ask you, Mike Whalen, step forward, identify yourself, and tell us why you stood up at this very place in 2018, over 3 years ago, to expose what was done to you by a Catholic priest of the Diocese of Buffalo.
Hello, my name's Michael Whalen, and in 2018 I stood here, and with my story of Orsalas and the abuse that he has done to me, I did it to let other survivors know that they weren't alone, that, and in every interview that I've done, I've told the survivors that I was there for them, that that is why I did this. And to this day, I still get calls of survivors calling me and telling me their stories of abuse. A lot of them don't want to step forward, but they can come to me. I always said I got two shoulders that they can lean on, that they can tell me their stories. Orsalas admitted the same day that I stood here about the abuse, and that it was a couple of dozen boys that he's abused. And a year before I stood here, I called the diocese. Well, I went to St. John Vianney Church, and I told the priest there my story. And he told me that he had to tell the diocese. When he told the diocese, I got a call from Gross and...
the then Bishop Gross. So
yes.
You reported Orsalas, it gets reported to the diocese. Now Bishop Gross, Mike Whalen, calls you on the phone, right?
Absolutely.
And tell us what he said to you and what they chose to do.
Bishop Gross told me that the statute of limitation has come and gone, that there was nothing that I could do. He offered me counseling, but I was already going to counseling. So I told him that I didn't need it. But he never apologized when he called me. He just told me that there was nothing I could do. And after the phone call, I talked to my sister, and she asked about restitution, and it never dawned on me. So I called back, and instead of getting Gross, I got the attorney, who told me again, statute of limitation has come and gone, and there's nothing I could do. So they knew a year before I came here and told my story, they knew about Orsalas. They told me, Bishop Gross told me that they knew about Orsalas.
Mike, let me stop you. Bishop Gross told you in that conversation they had known about Orsalas.
Yes.
But
yes.
Before you stood here in 2018, that name had never been publicly disseminated or revealed by Bishop Gross of the diocese, correct?
Correct. Correct. So, like I said, they knew about him and they did nothing. They moved him around. They did absolutely nothing. And to this day, I don't know if they even sent his case to Rome like they were supposed to. So I have no idea. I mean.
And so it not only begs the question, how many other survivors did Bishop Gross and the Diocese of Buffalo and the bishops of past and present make a choice to not reveal the names? And yeah. So you are here today with the other survivors, with this courageous survivor, and with our team to order, to require in this suit and others for this diocese to come clean with all the names that they know have offended, just as they had known Orsulus offended, or have been accused of offending, and make it public, because they have released a list, but it is a half list, which makes it a half truth, which makes it a dangerous whole lie. So this suit and the over 300 other cases that our firms have brought together here in this community demand transparency, demand accountability, and also give deep gratitude to all the survivors who are standing up. Because when Mike Whalen stood here in 2018, the law did not allow him to do anything. It did open up, and it's now open until August 13th. So survivors can do something. And so we stand letting survivors know there is time, but the clock is ticking. So thank you, Mike Whalen, for standing here years ago and standing up for truth and kids and child protection. There are other survivors, and I don't know how many, countless survivors that had similar stories about Bishop Groves having responded to them in one way or another in a half candid kind of way. Instead of saying to Mike Whalen, we know about Orsulus, they should have, as soon as they knew, did what you did. Stand up, tell the truth, put the name out there, protect kids. So thank you, Mike Whalen.
Thank you.
Kevin, you had a similar experience. Why don't you identify yourself and tell us what it is that you just shared with us a moment ago about your experience as it pertains to Groves and how you felt about that.
Thank you, Jeff. My name is Kevin Brunn. First of all, I'd like to thank Jeff, Steve, Stacy, all the attorneys who are standing behind the survivors and fighting so very hard for us. When I first decided to work up the courage to share my story with someone, I called the Diocese of Buffalo, and the first person who I was put in contact with was Auxiliary Bishop Groves. I shared my story with him. And what struck me as odd was the cavalier attitude he seemed to take when I was explaining what so tragically happened to me. I'm standing here today as a survivor with my fellow survivors to say that this man was put in charge of intaking calls from victims who chose to share their personal tragedies and pain. This person, I won't call him a bishop, I feel like my story that I expressed to him was compromised with the knowledge that he knew himself that he was a sexual abuser. I would say it's been a comedy of errors by the diocese over many decades, but I prefer to refer to it as a tragedy of errors, and it needs to end. And I'm hoping that the diocese will continue to negotiate in good faith. And thank you to Michael Whalen for having the courage to step forward. He set the path for all of us, and we're going to continue this fight and hopefully someday, soon, attain real justice for survivors. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Steve Boyd, please step forward. Angela, you mind holding this for him?
Thanks, buddy.
Because he's a big guy.
Yeah, I wanted to address the lawsuit that brings us here. Our client asked me last night to read a message from him, and I want to read that to you now. My family has been aware of the inappropriate contact with Bishop Groves since it happened 31 years ago. I first told my mother the full extent of that interaction 13 years ago. I am ready now, with the support of my family and my attorneys, to let the legal process run its course. We have been very careful in bringing a lawsuit of this kind, and we have had a lot of interactions with our client over the last many months, going back to last year, because we understand the gravity of it. We have talked to other witnesses who were present when these interactions with Bishop Groves took place, and when Bishop Groves took our client into a separate room. We spoke to those people. And it is really, truly with a heavy heart that we bring another lawsuit on behalf of another survivor because, you know, Jeff said the number, we're well over 300, but each one of them is an individual little boy or a little girl who was frightened for their life with the greatest power, a power that was not only over them, but they felt was over their parents. And we know that we're very confident in our survivor's story. And in this case, and in all the others, we've been very careful to vet all of them. And we just want to see this move forward. And that all perpetrators be made known so that people can come forward. And I can tell you that in the coming days, you will hear names of new perpetrators that are not on that list. I assure you. And you will probably hear those names after the window is closed. And I believe there are a lot of people out there that feel like they haven't seen their perpetrator's name on a list and they don't want to be the first to come forward. These men behind me and other men and women have been the first to come forward. This men in this lawsuit, the first to come forward with this perpetrator. We appreciate and are grateful for the courage that all of them have shown. Thank you.
We're going to take questions, but when Kevin used the term tragedy, there is also not just tragedy in the sorrow shared by this survivor and all the survivors who had to suffer in secrecy and silence, thinking they were alone and the only ones. And then when they did come forward to Bishop Groves or to the diocese, their story, their truth ignored, dismissed or discounted, and told there's nothing we can do and there's nothing you can do, so they did nothing. And they got away with it, didn't they? That is the tragedy. The hope and the promise is the courage of all these survivors and the law that has now opened up for survivors to have a voice and come forward as a Jane Doe, as a John Doe, or use their name as Mike chose to. And identify the offender and the diocese practices that allowed it to occur. And when we looked at this case months ago, we made sure, as we do with every survivor that has come forward and that will, that we do no further harm to him or her, that we deploy a strategy legally that gives them power, that gives them an opportunity to have their truth heard and believed, and gives them an opportunity thus to also identify the offender and the peril that exists. Today, the offender and peril that exists that had never before been revealed is Bishop Groves. And so gratitude to all the survivors that have and that will and that can know your privacy can be preserved, your truth can be revealed, the law is open with that opportunity in the next few weeks, and now it's time. And each survivor that stands with us today and works with us in sharing their secret and the shame that they carried for so many years is doing something to protect kids in the future, to identify the perils that have been past and present. Kepler, who abused Doe 363, is deceased, but the legacy of his harm is alive and evergreen. Groves is not. The time is now, and our gratitude to the survivors that stand with us and the colleagues that work with them, and to all of you. And with that, we'll take questions. Steve, come out.
Steve, was there something that specifically triggered this client to come forward? I mean, it's been known the CBA has been out there for quite some time.
There
something specific?
There was. Yeah. He read a story in December of 2019 about Bishop Malone's response to survivors. He wasn't living in the area at the time, and he was a Bills fan looking for news about the Bills. And he came across this story. And he found it to be arrogant. He found it to be unfeeling and uncaring. And he knew what had happened to him, and it triggered him. And at that point, he told his mother what happened. And he waited another few months. And after those few months, he called me.
You said that there were witnesses, and you've spoken to these witnesses. How many witnesses are there?
Well, we've spoken to three, including his grandmother, who told the bishop, "Get your hands off my grandson." They saw him groping him. They did not know the extent of what had gone on, but the grandmother got into it with the bishop at a reception where Bishop Gross appeared to be constantly by this boy's side with his hands on him.
This was at a confirmation reception?
A confirmation reception.
And the question is what made this survivor come forward? And that is a question that always gets asked, and the answer a 9 out of 10 times is that when a child is abused by a revered authority figure, a priest in this case, a bishop, or two priests, one a bishop, they suffer in silence, in secrecy and shame. And he thought, Dole 363 thought, he'd never share this other than with his mother, which he did 12 years ago. Just a moment.
And
that reality is one that survivors live. And it's one that needs to be understood. And that's why the law and the legislature opened this window for survivors to actually have their truth known, because they always lived in fear of not being believed and blaming themselves.
And I think
thinking they did something.
Yes, and I think it's important that you know that perpetrator Kepler abused him for a long period of time. And this person went to the confirmation thinking, this is my chance to tell the bishop. This is my chance to blow him in and to get him taken away. And he was betrayed by the bishop. And he realized almost immediately that the bishop was just like Kepler.
Do you have any information at this time that the bishop already knew about Kepler and his problems?
At the time of the abuse?
Yeah, at the time that he abused this person. Did he know about Kepler?
Well, as this person walked up to make his confirmation a sacrament, Bishop Gross was heard to say to Kepler, "Oh, Dick, you were right about this one. He looks like he could be in GQ magazine."
And to the question, do we know what Gross knew about Kepler having abused this child or others? The answer is, we're not precisely sure. But what we are sure of is that we have 5 cases that we have brought on behalf of survivors against Kepler that go back before 1985, and that he is a serial offender, and that we also know Gross was the guy tasked by the diocese to deal with this stuff. So that tells us a lot about what he should have known, or perhaps even did. And once this lawsuit is launched, as it has, we'll have the opportunity to ask the questions, and they'll be asked. And they'll be asked as soon as is possible.
This newest client, when did he get in touch with the firm, roughly?
It was during the pandemic, so I would say mid to late spring of last year.
So 2020, he told his mother in 2019?
Well, he told his mother the full extent in 2019. He had also found some photographs back in 2009 of his confirmation. And he told her then, and she just didn't make anything of it, and he let it go.
Did he explain what got him to want to file this? After telling his mother he waited a year, then they called you.
What prompted him to decide to file this?
I honestly, I don't know. That was our advice. But to approach us,
yes.
I think he became aware when he saw the cold reflections of Bishop Malone and how he was dealing with survivors. I think then he was triggered to stand up, and he was well aware. He was raised Catholic. He was well aware of the impact of naming a bishop. But this is his truth. I've spent hours and hours and hours speaking to him over the months. He has never wavered in his story by one word. He is completely credible. His mother is completely credible. His grandmother and I sat down for a couple of times. She is completely credible. We absolutely believe this client.
And he was triggered by what Bishop Malone said that caused him to contact us months ago. But he was also motivated by the reality that Bishop Groves is still alive, still prominent, still assigned, still a bishop, and still having access to other kids just like he did to him. And he could not live with that or carry that burden that another kid could be hurt in the face of any further silence. So it just took courage, and it took will, and it took an opportunity under the law for him to be able to do this. All three things had to converge.
What was it about what Bishop Malone said that triggered?
I'll be honest with you, Charlie. I don't recall. I remember it was a late December 29th, 2019 article by Jay Tokaz, in which he attempted to address survivors' concerns, and I think I think this was just part of what we saw as a long process of very poor understanding of what these survivors were going through, and some of the statements he made publicly were very offensive to our client.
Are you satisfied with what the diocese has said in the last 24 hours? The bishop is, stepping aside. I used the word voluntarily, and then reported to Cardinal Dolan. I mean, what is the survivor's, take on that?
Well, removing an accused priest from ministry is part of the goal, and Jeff has been doing that for years and around the country. So I would never use the word satisfied in this business, because the only true satisfaction would be if there was a way to give these people their childhoods back, and you can't do that. So the justice system, the system within the Roman Catholic Church, they're limited in what they can do, but I would say we're pleased that they took that step yesterday.
But we are not satisfied with the position of this diocese in not disclosing the names of all the offenders they know that have been reported to them, about whom they have files that have not been made public. We are not satisfied with the Diocese of Buffalo. We are here today to sound the alarm. Big problems, and it's not just Groves, obviously. Big problems there. There has not been transparency, there has not been candor, there has not been truth, and there are names yet to be revealed, only known to them. And to only known to us when the survivors come forward. So the time is now. There is time, but the time is running short, and we are far from dissatisfied with this diocese. Bishop Malone, his predecessors, and the present ones. It's time for a cleanup, and a massive cleanup of a massive cover-up, and that's what these survivors need, that's what these survivors want, and that's what's gonna make these communities safer. Thank you to this survivor, John Doe 363, and all those that stand with us and stand for child protection in the future. We are so grateful to you.
Well, the lawsuit itself could not be filed against the Diocese of Buffalo because they filed bankruptcy last year. So a proof of claim for this client will be brought with, as for all the other clients, in the bankruptcy proceeding. And now we have the ability under the Child Victims Act, we have sued the parish that was involved. And so those cases will process forward as they are able. In many ways, they're separate, but in many ways they are together. So right now our job will be to make sure that the diocese is served with the lawsuit papers, and then we'll discuss what those next steps are.
Steve, do you think at all any of these cases are ever going to see trial?
Well, you know, in the Diocese of Rochester, we just made a motion this month to bring 20 cases to trial. As it currently stands, the judge denied that motion, but one of the goals of ours would be working with the committee and the other lawyers in this space to bring some of these cases to trial so that the community can decide what justice is in these cases.
Do survivors want a trial?
Many do, and many are afraid of trial.
And, you know, the reality is that those are questions that need to be answered through the processes, because the courthouse doors have been opened, and to the some extent for survivors across the state, and to some extent the diocese, and in this case Buffalo, seek refuge in bankruptcy that limits the opening of the courthouse doors, and every survivor gives a chance to have a choice to settle, a choice to remain private, a choice to move forward, a choice to take action, and it's our job, and now the law gives them that choice. And just because you bring a case doesn't mean it goes to trial. Few do, but the reality is some will, someday. In the meantime, the cleanup continues.
Is it likely or possible that the bankruptcy proceeding will deliver what it is that you're looking for, the records?
We will require in the reorganization that they have done a full and transparent disclosure as a part of any settlement that ever gets made, when and if it gets made. That will be required, and that will be required by the committee and the survivors with whom they speak. That is disclosure. That's a part of the process. It's a work in progress, and there'll be more to come on that when there is more to come.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.